There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Into the final hour of the show on this Saturday afternoon. We're down at Barasti, Dubai 103.8. We are talking all things sport between now and 6 o'clock. And it's time to check in on some live action. We're going to get to Monaco in just a moment. But there's live rugby going on, the Premiership Rugby playoffs between Saracens and Gloucester. Saracens, Carl Van Rosenveld, have got a lead.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, that game kicked off at 4:30 UAE time. 29 minutes played, and it is Saracens that are leading the Cherry and White 8-7. The first of the semi-finals of the Gallagher Premiership this afternoon. And as I say, it is the Champions Cup winners currently leading that fixture 8-7.
We saw the Jaguars defeat the Waratahs a little earlier in the world of Super Rugby by a margin of 23-15. The Stormers, CVR, have just kicked off against the Highlanders.
Yeah, absolutely. They have... It's the Sharks, which will play the Lions a bit later. The Stormers against the Highlanders. I don't have that score live for you, Robbie.
It's literally just kicked off in the last couple of seconds. It's obviously still 0-0. We're going to keep an eye on that one between now and 6 o'clock.
Also, what I do have for you, the IRB World Sevens. It's happening in London this weekend, and a couple of scores I do have for you. Of course, the standing leaders, the USA, they beat Wales 28-6. Fiji have just beaten France 31-10. South Africa beat Japan 49-0. And Mark Archer's beloved Kiwis, New Zealand, beat Scotland 21-7.
What do we know about the live cricket? There's some World Cup warm-up games ongoing. Who's got an eye on that?
I have the live cricket. There's two matches taking place today. India are facing New Zealand, and the host England are taking on the old enemy, Australia. Let's start in Southampton. Australia have one over remaining of their 50 overs against England, and they're 287-7. Steve Smith, much talked about for this match in the last 12 months, 108 not out, so he scored a century. That'll be a welcome return to form and to the team for Steve Smith. David Warner also chipped in with 43 at the top of the order. The other match, well, we don't want to talk about it for too long with Monty here. India have been dismissed in only 39. They've only batted 39.2 of their 50 overs against the Black Caps, and they've been dismissed for 179. So New Zealand will need 180 to win. In some ways, that match is funny because both teams, it's a practice match. The result doesn't mean much. New Zealand would probably want a bigger chase just to give more guys a bit of an opportunity. And India probably would have wanted to score more runs to give more bowlers a chance in that game. But they'll be very disappointed. They've only batted 39.2 of their 50 overs. India dismissed for 179.
Of course, the big event taking place over in the Principality of Monte Carlo is the Monaco Grand Prix. Qualifying is 7 minutes old in that one. Too early to perhaps give you some concrete results in the early stages of qualifying, Calvin Roosevelt, or perhaps not.
Yeah, but what I can tell you is Kylian Mbappe has just pulled up into the race. Jose Mourinho is there. Cristiano Ronaldo was in the pit lane. Even your favourite Pamela Anderson has been seen at the Monaco Grand Prix. So it's all happening down there. But what I can tell you is, as you said, first 7 minutes are done. And it's Max Verstappen of Red Bull that has posted the fastest time. He's followed there by Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. Gasly from Red Bull in third. Kvyat from Toro Rosso in fourth. And Charles Leclerc, the hot favourite, he is now down into fifth position in the Ferrari, followed by Magnussen in the Haas.
Looking at this table in the Formula One standings thus far, Lewis Hamilton with 3 victories, Valtteri Bottas with 2. There have been 5 races. They have been utterly dominated by the Mercedes drivers. And there's a yawning gap now. In fact, there's a gap of 39 points between second place Valtteri Bottas and Max Verstappen in his Red Bull in third spot. Sebastian Vettel, who is much talked about, has not had the best start to this season on 64 points, more than 40 points adrift of Valtteri Bottas, nearly 50 points adrift of Lewis Hamilton. Is it already a two-horse race?
Yeah, I think it's pretty tough at the moment. You know, the Mercedes have been in such fine form. And we spoke about it a bit earlier, Robbie Greenford. Of course, if Leclerc could have got that victory in Bahrain, it would have given Ferrari a little bit of momentum. But you've got to take your hat off to Mercedes-Benz. They've been in sublime form. Lewis Hamilton, he just seems to get better and better. And if he suddenly drops the ball or something's not going right, Bottas is there to take the podium position. So it's going to be very, very tough to beat them. It'll be interesting to see how they go in Monaco, because last year, of course, Lewis did end third in that race. It was the Red Bulls which were the quickest. Once again, we see Max Verstappen in first position currently. But it's all about qualifying in Monaco. And I feel if Lewis Hamilton qualifies 1 and 2, or Bottas and Hamilton qualify 1 and 2, it's going to be very tough to beat them tomorrow.
It's not a track that's particularly easy to overtake on, that is for sure, is the Monaco Grand Prix street circuit. But Arch, in terms of the harmony between the team, it seems like, although Valtteri Bottas is an honest challenger, to Lewis Hamilton. There's a very set order there, and the Finn is not in any mood to upset the apple cart. That being said, with the Ferrari team, it feels like Sebastian Vettel increasingly under pressure, and even though he's the number one guy, Charles Leclerc has been quite fragrantly ignoring the orders from the Ferrari team, and he wants to go out and win races himself.
Well, it's the only challenge that Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes have is within their own camp. I think they are so dominant at the moment, and what we've seen over past recent seasons, and we've seen Ferrari get off to a bit of a flyer, Mercedes just sort of stay consistent to them, but Ferrari have had much stronger starts this season. Then we see the back half of the season when Mercedes just pull away and win the championship. This year it's been Mercedes from race one, and Lewis Hamilton looks in great form. The car looks great, and Valtteri Bottas is a perfect wingman, because he seems to be the sort of personality that doesn't want to be in the limelight. He's happy just going about doing his job as a racing driver. He's happy for Lewis to fly in the private jets and go to the parties and be seen on the arms of beautiful women, but that's not Bottas' style. Then you look at Ferrari, and Vettel's been around now. He's been around in Formula 1 for a while, and Leclerc is like the new hot young thing. He's the new personality on the scene. He's the new talent. He is the future for Ferrari, and he's obviously wanting to make an impact, and he's sort of like, he doesn't really care whose feathers he rustles at all there at Ferrari. So different dynamics between the two teams. You're seeing you know, a nice, steady, consistent Mercedes that we've seen over a number of years, and no more so this year. And then you see Ferrari with the young gun in there, really sort of stirring things up and winding up Vettel, who's not really racing that well. He's not driving that well. He's making mistakes. Obviously, he crashed in practice or qualifying earlier, and he's making mistakes as a driver. So maybe he's flustered. Maybe he's getting towards the end of his career, or he's not happy with not being competitive with Mercedes.
Yeah, it's quite possible. It's entirely possible that what's happened in those little dogfights that he's been having with Lewis Hamilton, that he's been coming off the wrong end of these last two seasons, have affected him mentally going into this season. But I can tell you, in this first session of qualifying, it is Max Verstappen who is quickest thus far in his Red Bull. Valtteri Bottas in second spot as things stand. It can change very rapidly, as we know. Lewis Hamilton, third place, alongside Charles Leclerc in his Ferrari, in fourth at the moment. We await to see how that develops over the course of the first qualifying session. But I want to move stateside, if we can, and talk a little bit of NBA, Mark Archer, because there's been a bit of a turn up for the books in the Eastern Conference. We expected the Milwaukee Bucks, having taken a 2-0 lead in that series, to be dominant over the Toronto Raptors. They've only gone and lost the next three games on the bounce.
Yeah, it's a great time if you're an NBA basketball fan, and the finals will get underway on the early hours of Friday morning. And we talk about, just to start with the Western Conference, and we'll come to the East in a second, the juggernauts that are the Golden State Warriors have punched their ticket for a fifth straight NBA Finals. They swept Portland Trailblazers 4-0 during the week, got through them without Kevin Durant, without DeMarcus Cousins, their two All-Stars, and they're currently resting up, getting healthy, and waiting patiently to see who they will face from the Eastern Conference. And just as you said there, it was 2-0 to the Milwaukee Bucks, and they looked like for all money to go in to make the finals from the Eastern Conference and qualify to take on the Golden State Warriors. But the Toronto Raptors have burst back into life and now lead the seven-match series 3-2 after winning Game 5. And now they've got Game 6 in Toronto tomorrow morning and can win that match at home and get to the finals. It was a great win for Toronto. The key win was actually winning in Milwaukee in Game 5, where they came from behind to win 105-99, and that now has given them a massive chance because they've overthrown the home court advantage that the Bucks had. The key man for them, playing almost on one leg, who has a little niggly injury, is Kawhi Leonard, who's been sensational. Was a big star with the San Antonio Spurs for many years, went on free agency this year. He's almost a hired gun because he's expected to leave in free agency in the offseason, leave Toronto and go to either maybe the New York Knicks, maybe to the LA Clippers, maybe even the LA Lakers. Let's wait and see. But he's only expected to be there for 1 year. But he's been sensational. Not a big fan of doing media stuff as Kawhi Leonard. He tends to slip under the radar. But he did chat after that game-winning performance in Game 5 to the media. This is what he had to say.
We made shots and got stops on the defensive end. We got to limit them to one shot. They're a great offensive rebounding team, great offensive team. We can't get them two or three looks at the basket.
If a series doesn't start until somebody wins on the road, it started tonight, but how do you beat the Bucks four times in a row?
I don't know. I haven't done it. We're taking it one game at a time, and, you know, I'm just excited that we got the win tonight.
With one win away until a trip to the NBA Finals, what's this team's mentality with history on the line?
I mean, I haven't even gotten the locker room yet. We just finished the game. But, we wanted to come out here, get the win. We weathered the storm early, and I'm going to see what we're going to be talking about in the locker room.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hot lunch combo.
We're talking NBA championship playoffs. Of course, the Golden State Warriors already in the NBA finals. We wait to see whether it will be the Milwaukee Bucks or the Toronto Raptors that join them from the Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee Bucks were outstanding in those opening two games, opening up a 2-0 lead. The Toronto Raptors have come surging back into it, and they take home court advantage, I believe, in Game 6, Mark Archer. 3-2 up. Do you think they're going to seal it in the very next game? Because obviously 3-3 and then Milwaukee, the ball is back in their court.
It's really tough to call because these two teams are quite well balanced. But on the form of the last three games, all the momentum now is with Toronto. It's a massive win when they've gone to Milwaukee and got that big win in Game 5. You'd expect Toronto now to go home on their home court and close the deal and get to the finals. But, you know, Milwaukee are the number one seeds for a reason. They had the best record on the NBA this year in the regular season, so don't rule them out. The key guy for them, what they've done is they've shut down the Greek freak, Giannis. They've done a wonderful job. And what they did is two things. One is the coach, Nick Nurse, swapped Kawhi Leonard, who we talk about as being an all-star, but he is a dominating defender. He was a key defender before he was an offensive player. And they switched him on Game 3 across to guard directly to guard the Greek freak. And he's done a big difference in stopping him scoring and dominating. He's a physical beast, and he's such a dynamic player. But the Greek freak still reckons that they are the best team in the NBA. This is what he said after Game 5.
It doesn't feel different. I just want to win, you know. And I think we had a chance to win the game today, but we didn't. Obviously, you just got to keep your head up, keep believing in yourself, you know, keep having that confidence, you know, try to, pick up your teammates and tell them, like, we can do this, you know. We've got two more games to go and we can do this. We've created great habit. We've been playing great basketball all year. We've been a good team. It's in the past now. I got to keep believing in this team, keep believing in what we're working on, and pick up my teammates up. That's it. We're not going to fold. We're not going to fold, man. Come on, man. Best team in the league, man. We're not going to fold. We're going to go and go and give everything we got. We're not going to go there. And even they set a great tone, and they come out and hit us in the mouth first. We can't fold. You know, we're going to come back to Milwaukee. Like, you cannot fold. You got to go out there and give everything you got. If we lose, we lose. Okay, cool. But we're not going to fold as a team, and that's not what we do.
No illusion as to what Giannis is feeling right there.
He's a little bit upset, isn't he? And obviously, they led the series 2-0. Everyone was talking about them closing out. All the commentators were saying it's going to be Milwaukee Bucks taking on the Golden State Warriors, the NBA Finals. The Raptors have been fantastic in winning the three games. Kawhi Leonard's been massive for them. Their bench has contributed, and that's been the big difference. But let's just have a quick listen to where the series is at. Let's listen to our good friend at ESPN, Stephen A. Smith. Never short of a comment or two. This is what he thinks where the series is going from now.
The Raptors, in something that certainly has surprised me, have taken a 3-2 lead and can close this thing out and go to the NBA Finals for the first time with a win tomorrow night at home in Game 6. So, Stephen A., I'll let you take it wherever you want. To you, what has been the key to the Raptors coming from 2-0 down in this series and now one win away from making it to the championship?
Well, the fact that we discovered that there's only one superstar in this series, and that's to Kawhi Leonard. That's really what this comes down to. That's not to take anything away from the Greek freak. He's young. He's incredibly talented. He's an all-star. He's a star in this league, and he continues to work on his game and get better and better. But there are levels to this, and he's simply not on Kawhi Leonard's level. There's one superstar, and his name is Kawhi Leonard. 15 points in the fourth quarter, 35 for the game, still hopping around on one leg and seemingly unstoppable. And in the case of the Greek freak, he's also assisted in limiting the Greek freak. When Nick Nurse made that move in Game 3 to switch Kawhi Leonard on the Greek freak, basically to stymie that momentum when he's got the ball at half court, barreling down, trying to get into the lane and what have you. If you cut off his dribble penetration in any way, it not just stymies him, but it stymies Milwaukee's entire offense because they try to utilize him as a playmaker that's going to draw attention and kick it out to open shooters. But that's not what's happening because those guys aren't open. They can't put the ball on the floor and make shots for themselves outside of Malcolm Brogdon. You got a guy like Eric Bledsoe who was shooting like 10% from the three-point range until this game. Obviously, they were still daring him to hit perimeter shots in the second half, and he was incapable of doing so. And then you look at Mirotić and Brooke Lopez and others, they're just limited with what they can do. So not only did Kawhi Leonard and Nick Nurse serve to expose Greek Freak and some of his limitations, they've exposed the limitations of the entire Milwaukee Bucks squad, and that's why Milwaukee is on the brink of elimination.
I find this Greek Freak thing, I'm not sure how I feel about just the casualness which these commentators refer to him. Does he like this nickname, Mark Archer? Is he a fan of it?
Can you pronounce the surname?
Don't get me started on that, but can we not just call him Giannis?
Giannis, I've called him Giannis. Yeah,
Giannis. Antetokounmpo?
Yeah, that's it. And so I think they're just taking the easy option there, Robbie. They've bailed out like I do and just call him Giannis the Greek Freak.
But there we go.
He is a player for the future. He is a physical specimen. What an athlete he is. And he is going to be one of the dominant figures in the NBA going forward now in the next decade.
We've talked a lot about how this could be the final season of preeminence for the Golden State Warriors. They're into yet another final. I think it's their, if I'm not mistaken, it's their fifth in a row. They've already won three of them. They lost that reversal to the Cleveland Cavaliers that was inspired by the great LeBron James, who has not been at this playoffs with his new team, the LA Lakers, but could be a bit of a shake-up in the world of NBA over the course of the summer. And one man who's been in the headlines a lot, even though he's not been on the court itself, is Kevin Durant. He is, I suppose, the second best. And I guess that would be open to debate as to whether you'd maybe put Kawhi Leonard or maybe even the Greek Freak himself up there in the conversation. But in terms of the NBA All-Stars behind LeBron
Steph
James,
Curry's not far away as
who's
well.
The undoubted best player in the NBA, Kevin Durant has been forced to defend his position in the Golden State Warriors setup, Mark Archer, because they've been doing quite nicely without him.
Yeah, he has been, once he switched across from Oklahoma City Thunder sort of two seasons ago, everyone said he was leaving a team to go to a championship-winning team and make them stronger, make them almost undefeatable. But before he came, they were winning championships, and he became their primary scorer, and also he's a great defensive player. Now, he injured a calf muscle / Achilles. They haven't really they love not telling the full story about injuries in American sports, so it hasn't been disclosed yet, but he's still expected to miss. He's missed the last couple of weeks, and the machine that is the Golden State Warriors, the juggernaut, got past Houston. They swept Portland, and they've made the finals with going back to old school, their old school team that did it without KD. The likes of the Splash Brothers, the likes of Andre Iguodala stepping up, Draymond Green stepped up, and their veterans on the bench have really done a good job going back to old sort of Golden State Warrior basketball pre-KD. So they've shown that they can win without him, and they will go on and do that. He's expected back before the end of the final series. But the big thing is now, if they win a series without KD, where does it leave him? Did they even need KD? What's his legacy? What does he bring to the team if this team without KD can win it? So there's a lot of discussion here that KD is expected to leave. The talk is that he will leave Golden State Warriors. He's a free agent at the end of the season. His destination's unknown. He wants to be known as a guy that goes and a franchise gets built around him, and he becomes the main figure, as he was to a degree with Golden State Warriors. But they had Klay Thompson, but they had Steph Curry, who's been fantastic in the series. And the talk is that KD will leave. So a lot about what he brings to this team is being debated now in American sport.
It's an interesting one. It'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on, particularly if the Golden State Warriors do romp on to yet another NBA title without KD, although the expectation is that he will be back and he will be playing some role in those NBA finals. We'll keep an eye on the Eastern Conference. It's very tight between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Toronto Raptors. But I want to switch and I want to cross quickly over to Monaco, Carl Van Rosenvelt, because it's all going off in qualifying.
Absolute shocker. Absolute Ferrari shocker. What they have done is they've kept Leclerc in the garage hoping to save his tyres. And what's happened now is he hasn't made it through to final qualifying. He was in 16th position. He has now dropped out. On the other end of the spectrum, very good news for his teammates. Sebastian Vettel has qualified fastest for the final session. He's at the top of the board at the moment, followed by Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas, Max Verstappen, Kvyat Gasly in the Red Bull, Daniel Ricciardo, Sebastian Grosjean in the Haas. What I can tell you is no Williams team will be going through to the final qualifying. Racing Point are also out. And then, of course, the big news for Monaco at the moment, Charles Leclerc, he was quickest in P3. He is now out of the main qualifying.
But what's happened? Where have Ferrari gone wrong here?
So basically what they did is they kept him in the pits hoping to save his tyres for the final qualifying while all the other cars were zooming past. Hülkenberg then got a faster time than him, qualified in the 15th position. The Renault driver is now through. Charles Leclerc will be starting 16th on the grid tomorrow. And I tell you what, Robbie, you know that circuit. I know that circuit. There's no chance he will get anywhere to the close. anywhere close to a podium position tomorrow.
And that is his home Grand Prix, is Charles Leclerc. He was excited about representing the red of Ferrari on his home Grand Prix circuit. He's going to have to do so from way back on the grid, down in 16th position. It is Sebastian Vettel. Will this be the race which sees his season take a turn for the better? The German has been struggling with Ferrari this season. He's not been on his game. Ferrari have not been on their game. Mercedes-Benz have been absolutely dominant. And Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas have been the two primary candidates. Hamilton already a winner of three races. Bottas a winner of two. And it's one of those circuits where something could happen. We saw Daniel Ricciardo win last year, Carl van Rosenveld. It's a circuit that can throw up a surprise, and that's what's needed, I think, to invigorate some element of jeopardy into this Formula One season.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that can happen tomorrow is, as you say, a big crash takes out five cars, etc. But at the end of the day, if Vettel does manage to go through final qualifying in the front, or I kind of still think it will be a Mercedes-Benz 1 and 2. It's so tough to overtake on that circuit. You kind of, if all else goes well from a mechanical perspective, you're guaranteed to win that race tomorrow. But as I say, what a mess up by Ferrari. They'll be asking so many questions. Leclerc would be absolutely furious. And if I was him, I'd just head straight to Jimmy's in Monaco. I wouldn't even bother about racing tomorrow because, as I say, it's going to be a horrible day for him on the track in his hometown.
Looking in on the live cricket, the World Cup warm-up games for you taking place. I can tell you, 50 overs gone between Australia and England. The tourists, I say the tourists, the visiting team, England are the hosts, of course. Australia have made a sizable target of 297 for England to chase down at the Rose Bowl in Southampton. And the live match taking place between India and New Zealand. This one could be telling in terms of World Cup warm-ups. New Zealand have got India out for a total, a modest total of just 179. But New Zealand have lost a wicket in the early stages of their innings. And that wicket has been suffered or has been taken. Munro bowled by Jasprit Bumrah, LBW. So it's Guptill and the captain, Kane Williamson, at the crease. We'll keep an eye on that live cricket. We've got live rugby as well. Lots of sport going on. We'll talk a little bit more football when we come back.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're deep into the second session of qualifying for the Monaco Grand Prix. It's just gone 5:30 on your Saturday afternoon. We're with you through until 6:00 on The Grill. It's myself, Robbie, it's Carl van Rosenveld, it's Rob Wadsworth, it's Monty, it's Mark Archer. It's a huge packed house full of panellists this afternoon down here at Barasti. And we've got an eager eye on that second session of qualifying, Carl van Rosenveld. The headline news is that Charles Leclerc of Ferrari already out in 16th spot. What's going on at the top?
Yeah, as you said, that of course is the big news for Monaco. What I can tell you now is it's 15 minutes on the track. After 5 minutes, five cars will fall out. But it's once again the same old story. It's Mercedes-Benz 1 and 2. What I can tell you is Valtteri Bottas has taken the lead at the moment. Or should I say he's the leader in qualifying. He's followed by Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, Kvyat in the Toro Rosso in fourth, Daniel Ricciardo in the Renault. He's having a very good session out there. Sainz in the McLaren, and then of course Sebastian Vettel, that was the quickest. He is now down in seventh position, and he'll be looking to improve. As I say, it's just about 11 minutes still left of a qualifying in session Q2 down in Monaco, and as those results come in, we'll be bringing you bang up to date.
Checking in on the live rugby action. It is the Premiership Rugby Playoff. Saracens taking on Gloucester. And into the second half now. 3 minutes on the clock in that second half. The Saracens are leading 23-7 CVR. And there's also a game going on down in the world of Super Rugby.
Yeah, sorry to correct you there, Robbie Greenfield. There's actually 28-7. What I can tell you is Nick Tompkins has just dived over for a try that's been converted by Owen Farrell. Saris now lead that fixture 28-7. Gloucester, a try by Ben Morgan, a conversion by Billy 12-3. So not really going the way of the Cherry and Whites at the Allianz Park today. And Saracens, once again, seem to be in fine form. As I say that, Owen Farrell has kicked that conversion. It's now 30-7. Going down to Newlands in Cape Town, where it's the Stormers taking on the Highlanders. Herschel Giantjes has dived over for a try for the Stormers. That's been converted by Josh Stunder. The Stormers are leading the Highlanders 7-3, 21 minutes played in that fixture. If you are a Super Rugby fan, big clash coming up at 7:15. Of course, it's the Sharks taking on the Lions. That game is live from Durban in South Africa. And then, of course, the other of the semi-finals, that's the Exeter Chief, the defending Gallagher Premiership champions. They are taking the Northampton Saints on a little bit later on this evening.
we'll be able to give you a full result of that qualifying for the Monaco Grand Prix in about 15, 20 minutes' time. But until then, I want to return to the world of football if I can. Let's go full circle. We started with football. We'll finish with football. Some news breaking in the last hour or so, Monty, yeah, about the future of the Paris Saint-Germain manager, Thomas Tuchel. And despite the fact that there were some question marks about that defeat to Manchester United, about the lack of progress that once again has highlighted what was an otherwise a very successful domestic season for PSG, Thomas Tuchel will remain the manager for the foreseeable future.
I think that's a right decision to keep him, and rather than shaking up the complete system so soon, so early, I think it's a right decision by Paris Saint-Germain to keep Thomas Tuchel for another year, just to give him a try and see how far he can now get the team to the Champions League. Hopefully that he manages to keep Kylian Mbappe. Becoming the manager of PSG would be a challenge for Thomas Tuchel. I don't know whether Kylian Mbappe stays, but PSG board has already said that he's not leaving for Real Madrid. So he probably will have the same set of players and more players coming in next season, and with an eye on improving on their Champions League position, not getting eliminated in the round of 16 or the quarterfinals, is why they're giving him another chance. Yeah.
Why have they not done so well, Rob? Is it simply the strength of Ligue 1 versus some of the other leagues in Europe? But it seems like they've got such a fantastic team on paper, and they've got stage fright against some of the big clubs that they've come up against in the knockout stages.
Yeah, I think there's two factors with it. I think, yeah, the strength of Ligue 1 doesn't really give them any competition, so they come into the Champions League games and where they're really tested, and they struggle to respond to that. I think the second factor with it is they have got some obviously world-class players in there, world-class talents, but they haven't been able to gel as a team. So you watch them on the pitch and you struggle to see really an identity, you struggle to see really a format of play which is suited to the players that they have. It feels a little bit like they've taken the route of the old Real Madrid Galacticos of buy the best players, let's chuck them on the pitch and see what we can do, without having a real structure in place to be able to deliver the performances. It's interesting that he's obviously offered Tuchel a contract to extend, and he's kept on. I did wonder, with Arsene Wenger's recent noises about wanting to get back into football management, if that was going to happen with him going to PSG, but obviously not. And interesting to see what happens in the future with Thomas Tuchel at PSG.
I did want to get your thoughts as well on another story that it never really made the mainstream press, but there were rumours doing the rounds that Pep Guardiola had agreed to join Juventus. Now, that is not going to happen. He is going to stay at Manchester City, but I was speaking to a friend of mine and he said, well, no smoke without fire. It's something that you can see happening down the road. It's the next logical step for Pep Guardiola as he continues to conquer the world of football from a managerial perspective. But where's that come from, in your opinion? We're speculating wildly, of course, at this point. And is that a logical destination for Guardiola?
It all started with a tweet from a football journalist, Adriano Del Monte. He tweeted very strongly up that Pep Guardiola had spoken to the Juventus officials last week behind closed doors and had signed a 4-year contract with Juventus. And like you said, there is, it could happen, because Juventus' job for me right now is an open job. It's a top job for every manager to go and, seize the opportunity. Pep Guardiola, I don't know whether it's a challenge for him to continue being Manchester City manager. Manchester City, we've seen, have achieved domestic rewards this season. But will they achieve the same next season? Pep Guardiola as a manager, I think he likes challenges. He's moved on from Barcelona to Bayern Munich to Manchester City. He's been in Manchester City for now like 3 or 4 years. Successful, the best manager ever in Manchester City's history. He'll probably move on to a new challenge next season. You never know what goes around in the transfer speculation, management speculation. Yeah.
In terms of Juventus and their next manager, there is talk of Antonio Conte returning to the club to have a second spell as manager of Juventus. Rob, is that something that you can see happening? Max Allegri seemingly on his way out, and there's a big vacancy there for surely a top name to come in with the stars that they've got at their disposal. I know Jose Mourinho has been rumoured as well. I think the British press in particular have been keen to push that agenda. Jose Mourinho at Juventus, I for one would scratch my head if that happened, because...
Really?
Yeah.
I can see it.
I can see it.
I can really see it, yes, for sure. I mean, Juventus, eight titles on the bounce,
yeah.
I think.
And it's good.
I can see Juventus there. I see Mourinho there at Juventus.
You can?
For sure, yeah. It'd be a... It's a
They're fed up with playing stylish football, do you think?
Maybe, yeah.
I think
it's a stature of a club that Mourinho would go to. You know, there's very few out there
I don't doubt Mourinho would want to go there. Yeah. I would doubt that Juventus would want to hire Mourinho after what happened at Manchester United.
I think he's still got that Stardust status to be able to go into a club and to be able to deliver trophies.
Concern is whether Mourinho would be welcomed by the Juventus fans after what he did in the Champions League night when Manchester United beat Juventus in the group stages. Do you remember what he did? He got on the field and he taunted the entire stadium. I was there watching the game.
Yeah, yes, he certainly did. Yeah, I think that was, again, more indicative of how much pressure he was under than anything directly aggravating towards Juventus. But Carvin Roosevelt, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this as a Manchester United fan. I mean, we got to the point where Mourinho just absolutely, and I know, look, they've had their problems subsequently, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's bright start has given way to the same kind of mediocrity that we got used to seeing under Mourinho's tenureship. And he's looking back now, he's been doing a lot of media, he's been saying that the problems in that club run much deeper than just the manager. But in his seeking out of conflicts with the players, in his constantly morose demeanour, in his negativity, in his stodgy football, I, for one, cannot see anything in the last couple of years that would attract a club like Juventus, which is one of the great savants, one of the great stylish clubs of the European age, in hiring Jose Mourinho as manager.
Well, I'm purely speaking from a Manchester United point of view. I actually don't think Mourinho was so bad for the club. If you look at what we've done since Alex Ferguson left, at least he brought two trophies to the club. And I think at the end of the day, that's what Jose does for you. And in all honesty, if you look at his track record compared to Ole that was going to bring the new light to the club, I actually don't think he did all that bad, you know. Jose Mourinho is a very special character, and I think often what he dictates to, and this is just seeing him on BN Sport and so forth, is he's basically saying at United he could not select the players. The players were bought and he kind of had to manage them. Do I see him going to a club like Juventus? Not quite. I think the reason why I don't see him going there, of course, he's got the history there with Inter Milan. I kind of more see him going to an AC Milan than to Juventus, if you want my honest opinion. So, Robbie, to be honest, I would talk that one down. Yes, it's a type of club he would like to go for. He wants to be a manager of a big, big club. But I think Jose, for him, and as he's correctly said, if he moves on to the next club, it has to be by the Jose rules. He's not going to take any instructions from Woodward like he was at Manchester United. So I kind of more see him linked to AC Milan. If he does go back to Italy, then with Juventus.
Yeah, there's one manager I think who could head to Juventus is Carlo Ancelotti as well, from Napoli. Potential manager, Italian connection.
Yeah, reports obviously that Antonio Conte set to join Inter Milan as manager emerging in the last day or so. And we wait to see, because it will spark a bit of a merry-go-round, Rob. It, not just in terms of players and transfers, but where managers end up as well over the summer. Who gets sacked? Who replaces who? If Derby qualify for the Premier League, if they beat Aston Villa in that playoff promotion, does that open the door for Frank Lampard then to be offered the job as Chelsea manager? Is that a job that he could turn down? I think we've already established that were he to be offered it, he would have to accept that opportunity. And will Maurizio Sarri be given another chance at the helm of Chelsea? I think that's one of the key questions. Mauricio Pochettino, he is going to be continuing as Tottenham manager. We know that. We know that in the Premier League, at the top clubs, it's relatively stable. But there could be some changes going on in some of the big European clubs.
They certainly should. As you say, the Premier League is relatively stable. Jurgen Klopp and Guardiola aren't going anywhere unless it's their choice, obviously. I think that there's some interesting aspects to it, especially with the European leagues, as you touched on. You look what's happening out there in the leagues now. You've got Juventus who've won it 8 leagues in a row. Bayern have done the double again. You've got Barcelona who've again won the league. So you've got some stability in those clubs who've won the tournaments consistently. But that's not to say that the chairman out there, the chief execs, aren't trigger happy. And if something isn't fit and it's not right, then there are going to be opportunities for managers. The other aspect to it is, I think, is if managers don't fit with the club. So if there's fallouts out there and managers don't fit in there, they're very happy to get rid of people. So that's when we see the openings happening.
We've got to look ahead. We've already looked ahead to the playoff championship final between Aston Villa and Derby. We've touched briefly on the Europa League final. We will not be on the grill again until next Saturday. It will be in a much more in-depth preview of that Champions League final. But let's go round the panel if we can and get some thoughts on how that Champions League final might play out. It's a fascinating one. Tottenham bidding for a first ever European Cup. Liverpool bidding to win a sixth. It would be the perfect riposte for Liverpool, losing out to Manchester City by a point in the Premier League title race, were they to go and lift the European Cup for a sixth time. It would be a remarkable feat for Tottenham and Mauricio Pochettino. Where would that rank among all the great European Cup wins? You'd have to go back to Porto back in 2004 under Jose Mourinho for the less sort of least heralded team to lift that competition, Rob. I mean, where would that rank if Tottenham were to go all the way and actually win it, having beaten who they've beaten to get there?
I was going to say, in terms of who they've beaten and got to the final, it's been an amazing achievement. And under going back, you look at it back at it, they haven't signed anyone for 2 years. So they've had the same squad in place for 2 years. They've not spent anything on any new players, and he's taken to the final, and it's just a wonderful achievement. I think the Porto one's a little bit better. And the reason for that is because of the finances. Having said they haven't signed anyone, the finances Tottenham have got and the infrastructure they've got there is fabulous, whereas Porto were nowhere near that. And for them to go through and what they achieved was unbelievable as well under Jose Mourinho.
Porto, back in 2004, that was the famous Mourinho sprinting down the touchline at Old Trafford as they knocked them out. I'm sure Carl van Roosevelt can remember that moment fondly as a Manchester United fan. But who do you expect to dominate the game, if any, Carl?
I don't know. I'm going against the favourites here, and I kind of fancy Spurs for this final. I just think that Spurs, so far this season in the Champions League, I'm speaking about, they've produced those big moments when they needed to produce. Yes, that City game could have gone either way, but to me, just to get that victory against City in that first leg was so important to them. And every time they've been under pressure, they got some player that kind of produced that X factor. And I just feel Harry Kane could be back. It would be interesting to see if he does make that starting lineup next Saturday evening. Poch, to me, is a great tactician. I kind of feel it's not going to be easy against Liverpool, but I just got a funny feeling Spurs are going to sneak one on come next weekend.
I think what's really helped Spurs out is this 2-3 week break they've had since the end of the season, because they were looking really lethargic, really tired towards the end of the season, and obviously results went against them. So to have a 2-3 week break now, they've had a training camp in Marbella, I think, in Spain, and then to come back fresh, and I think they've got a really good chance. And they've really troubled. They were the one team that troubled Liverpool, other than Man City this season, with their results that they've had.
Absolutely correct. I mean, it was basically your own goal.
That's
how they lost against them. So, you know, I just, as I said, I think if they can kind of get everything together, as I said, it would be interesting to see if he does use Kane. I think they've got a very good chance, Robbie Greenfield.
Arch, do you expect Tottenham to do the unthinkable and lift the European Cup?
My heart says I'd love Spurs to win it. My head says Liverpool will be massive favourites. But I agree with CVR. I think take the Anfield factor away from Liverpool playing at home, which is a massive advantage we saw in the match against Barcelona. Take them to a neutral venue. Spurs, it's a free hit for Spurs. Underdogs have, you know, no signings for 2 years, Champions League final. It's almost a free hit. That they're not expected to win the match. So all the pressure, all the historical pressure, all the tradition, all the expectation is with Liverpool to win this and win it relatively comfortably. If Spurs can stay in the fight and be in the match and get it into the second half when they still have a chance, I really fancy the underdog story here. And it would be an amazing achievement. For me, it would automatically make Pochettino manager of the year in the UK for the club. And it would be a massive achievement. And it will take that club that some will say has lacked ambition in the last couple of years, not by not making big signings, but they've done a wonderful job of bringing in players and coaching them to being a really well-developed team, and finding talent within the squad, finding talent for value, and making that into a world-class outfit. I always do find it weird when you've got the second and third best team in a country playing off for the Champions League final, the Champions of Europe. It doesn't sit well with me as a principle. I'd rather see one of the champion clubs from one of the respective nations be in the final, win the final, but let's not get started on that debate. But for me, Liverpool massive favourites. I'd love Spurs to win it. It'd be a massive success story for Pochettino and for the club, and it will really set them up with the new stadium to go to different heights and maybe sign players, keep players as well, keep a manager who's been talking about leaving, and that would really kick them off and maybe then becomes a big three in the UK.
I think that's a big thing, isn't it? It's maybe not such about signings, it's who they retain, and particularly the manager, and obviously particularly Harry Kane and Dele Alli and the like, is retaining those for the next few years is vital for them.
Would it hasten Pochettino's departure, were they to win, Rob? Or do you think losing would tempt him to look elsewhere? I mean, in other words, would the result affect how long you see him staying at Tottenham?
Where do you think he'd go? Where would he go?
Juventus.
Well, Real Madrid, but I suppose with the odd decision to return.
Would he go to Barcelona, maybe?
If they lose tonight, Barcelona, then he would.
Yeah, maybe. For sure. Never know. Well, I think he's got the opportunity there. he's ingrained in the club. They've got a style, a philosophy, a way of playing, and a way they run the club. And Daniel Levy there has done an exceptional job, despite his critics, to really manage that club very, very well, I think, financially. And he's got the opportunity to build a dynasty there. Let's be fair. They've got a youngish squad. They've got a fantastic stadium, as Arch said. And if they win this Champions League, it's going to set them up. I mean, even if they don't, they've got the potential to set themselves up for the next 4, 5, 6 years to do something really, really special with that club.
In terms of the Champions League, looking a little bit further into the future, Rob, there is some news about a restructuring that's going to take place in the Champions League. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I can, yeah. So what they're proposing, and I should preface this by saying it's out for consultation, is how it's described, is that in 2024, the structure of the competition will alter to become in 32 teams, and there would be 4 leagues of 8 teams. Now, the biggest factor with this is they would introduce a relegation and promotion. So of the 32 teams, 24 of those would retain their place for the following season in the Champions League automatically. This would be regardless of their finishing position in the domestic league. So that would mean of the other teams that could qualify, they would come through the Europa League. So the 4 semi-finalists from the Europa League would be promoted into the Champions League, and then national champions from 4 other leagues would be welcomed into the Champions League. So they're effectively, if that makes sense, they've effectively slightly or more than slightly closing the door to teams being into the Champions League. So for example, Ajax wouldn't have got, if this system was in place for this season just gone, Ajax wouldn't have been in the Champions League.
That's shocking, isn't it? Immediately, the reaction to that, a team that, well, for all intents and purposes, may as well be in the Champions League final, given the fact they were 3 goals up with just 45 minutes of football to play. But we know what happened in that second half. But, I mean, they've been such a fantastic addition to this season's Champions League. And it gives young players a chance. It gives a team like Ajax, who focus on youth, a chance to... It keeps everything bubbling up. It keeps everything moving around. The water's become very stodgy.
Exactly.
If it's just a closed shop, and this seems like just yet another step towards a European Super League.
As I said, another step closer to a European Super League. It effectively closes the door, and it's done for pure greed and finance, I believe.
UEFA, honestly, what are they doing? Taking the Europa League final, I mean, it's questionable. It seems like everything they're doing is motivated by money.
I think it's motivated by money, and I would, in addition to this, it's UEFA, but it is also the big clubs. So this has come from the big clubs that are out there, the European Super League, who are, I think, supporting this move because it guarantees them finance, it guarantees them a position at the top table for the Champions League season after season without having to compete for it.
Speaking of football governing bodies, speaking about closed shops, it's interesting to see the FIFA's come out during the week, and it's now definitely going to be a 32-team World Cup, the next one. It's not going to be in multiple countries, not 48 teams, so they've reverted to norm there. And that was a lot of smoke there for a while about the change that may have been made by FIFA to that the next World Cup. But, I think it's a good thing. I think that's ultimately what was bid for. That's what will happen, and then the extension will happen with the USA, Canada and Mexico. And
since when did what was bid for be really an issue, Mark Archer, when it comes to FIFA and the World Cup? It seems like they just make it up as they go along. We can't really get into the details of why the 2022 World Cup was kept at 32 teams. I know it's not for want of trying on the part of Gianni Infantino and FIFA. They're desperate to get it to 48 teams. We had a long conversation during the show on Off Script this week, and I'm of the belief, and I've been called elitist to say this, but I think that the World Cup should stay as 32 teams. I think it should be an achievement in itself to reach the World Cup finals. And when you consider that 48 nations, there's about 200 nations on this planet, that's 1 in 4 will be at the next FIFA World Cup in 2026. And it just, first of all, removes all the intrigue and curiosity around qualifying, because it becomes that much easier. It's that less likely that a team like Italy or the Netherlands, who missed out on the 2018 World Cup, will ever fail to qualify for a tournament again. And it breeds lower standards being good enough. Carl Van Roosendaal, I'm looking at you.
No, I fully agree with you. I don't often agree with you, but I'm agreeing with you on it. The only reason why I maybe won in 48 teams is the only way South Africa could possibly qualify again for the World Cup, unless we end up hosting
it.
Well,
yeah,
but I fully agree with you.
We're sitting in a country where going to 48 teams would be incredibly advantageous. That would help I mean, I think if this had been 48 teams back in 2018, I'm pretty sure the UAE would have got through and been part of that World Cup, which would be fantastic. I'm absolutely in favour of a country getting there on merits, by rights. But I do believe there ought to be some level of achievement in actually making it. And that's...
There's a real danger there of just diluting the competition, isn't there? You look at the standard of the quality of the qualifiers and some of the games in there, and then you're translating that into a World Cup, which is meant to be a prestigious tournament, world-leading tournament, the biggest sports tournament in the world alongside the Olympics, and you dilute it.
It's the biggest event on the planet. But we saw that in Russia.
But in all honesty, and not taking anything away from a country, do we really want to see France beat somebody 10-0? In all honesty, I don't think that's what the World Cup is all about. And that is going to happen when you start making it to 48 teams. I'm sorry to say, depending on how the draw goes, you're going to see 7-0, 8-0 games, which is not what you're going to see.
I agree completely.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I think it's a moot point because we can debate it all we want. It's going to happen. FIFA are going to have their way. And by 2026, which is a co-shared World Cup between Mexico, the USA and Canada, which again... I mean, you can debate all day long about how much that's going to affect the competition. There will be 48 teams. It will not be the World Cup as we know it, put it that way. But we're coming to the end of our show here, our broadcast here down at Barasti on this Saturday afternoon. We do ought to check in, though, Carl, one last time on qualifying for the Monaco Grand Prix. How's it looking?
Yeah, what I can tell you is that we are down to the final 10, Robbie Greenfield. There's 6 minutes left of qualifying, and it's the Mercedes-Benz show once again. Valtteri Bottas is leading it. Lewis Hamilton in second. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull in third. Sebastian Vettel is in fourth. Gasly is in the Red Bull in fifth. Magnussen in the Haas in sixth position. And as I say, 6 minutes left. Currently, it's Mercedes-Benz 1 and 2.
That is just about all we've got time for on this Saturday afternoon. Who's going to win the Copa del Rey, Monty?
I go for a Barcelona win tonight, 4-2 to Barcelona. Although Valencia will give them a hard fight because they haven't won this season. It was a draw in the La Liga when both teams played each other. So, but Barcelona, yes.
Yeah. Barcelona will be desperate to make up, or at least to go some small way to making up for that aberration they suffered at Anfield just a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be back this time next Saturday on the grill, building up to that UEFA Champions League final, looking back on another week of top quality sport, looking back on the opening fixtures of the Cricket World Cup, which gets underway on Thursday, looking back on the first week of the French Open. Loads of live sport next Saturday, so whatever you do, make sure to join us then between 3 and 6 o'clock on Dubai Eye 103.8. A big thank you to Mark Archer.
Thank you, boys.
Big thank you to CVR.
Thank you very much.
To Rob Wadsworth. You enjoyed your grill debut, Rob?
I have. Thank you very much.
Great Thanks, stuff. Guys. Thank you for being here. And to Monty, of course.
Thank you, Robbie.
As well. We'll be back from our show perspective on Off Script tomorrow at 5 p.m. And Chris McCarty is still on holiday, and he remains on holiday for the foreseeable future. Until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.